If the speakers who are here would come up, we have approximately 10 minutes. We don't want to run into the chapel schedule. And I'm looking for Phil Steffen. Is Phil Steffen here? Amount of time, what we are going to do is, since Dr. Steffen had the most sensitive paper and the most revelatory one, we're going to let the panel have the first shot at asking him questions. We cannot get into any theological debate at this time, with all due respect to Dr. Culver, about the advantage of dead orthodoxy.
My question would be, you mentioned a study of 10 immigrant groups and how all of them deposed their leader. I was wondering if the Buffalo Synod and the congregations with them were included in that study, if you know.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Because they didn't.
They didn't.
Did not depose their leader, at least not for several years.
They left.
No, I didn't have the original study. It was a second.
Can you speak into the mic, please? It's a little hard to hear.
No, I don't have that information.
Speaking into the mic means speaking into the mic.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Question to Dr. Steffen.
Other questions?
Actually, I'm kind of sympathetic to Martin Steffen, having been forced to cross the Mississippi myself.
All right, does anybody have any questions for Dr. Mays? One another. If you have questions for one another, please. Otherwise, we'll quickly move to open them up to the floor. Okay. Pastor Ramirez.
I've got a question for Pastor Steffen. Do you know, in your research, when I can't remember the name of the lady, but when she went to go see Pastor... Pardon?
Louise.
When Louise went to go see Pastor Loeber, was this a formal confessional, or was this her going and talking to him and expressing her concern of what was going on? Because that would make a big difference.
Well, it sounded like an emergency for her, I'm not privy to whether she had to make an appointment or not. I am very aware that I'm supposed to use this mic like this.
I guess I don't mean whether it was an official appointment or not, but was she there making formal confession? Private confession and absolution.
Yes. I understood it that way, yes. I can't cite something somewhere that says she went for a private confession. I don't know.
Okay.
The way things worked, it seemed to me that when you're hurting enough and you call your pastor and ask for an appointment or say to him, I need to talk, it becomes real clear at that moment that this is a moment of private confession. The content of it would suggest that also.
Would you have any documents to point that it was confession and absolution? Or?
I do not. They are only my conjecture.
Okay, thank you.
Conjecture.
I'd like to ask Ryan Myers a question. Do you know of any
Ryan Myers.
Of confession and absolution?
Ryan Myers, Mr. Ryan Myers, do you know of any situation of a confession and absolution where a certificate is given later?
Dr. McKenzie, please.
Yeah, Dr. Stefan, I have a couple of questions, but let me just follow up on the one regarding Louise Ginther or whoever it was who made confession.
Yes, it was Louise.
Well, my question to you on that is, both in your book and here today, you've charged Loeber and the others with breaking the ordination oath. My question to you would be, do you know what oath they actually took? Because the oath that I took never mentioned confession and absolution. So I just wonder whether you know what oath they actually took.
Well, the agenda...
Use the mic.
The agenda throughout the last 100 years, it seems to me, keeps reflecting that when we talk about ordination, there's an italicized line about Pastor.
I actually think that that's only been in the Missouri Synod agenda for about the last generation. It was not the oath that I took.
No.
It really came into our circles in the 1980s. So I'm a little skeptical as to whether that was really a part of the oath that Loeber and Walther and the others took. And I just wondered whether you've ever had a chance to check that out.
No, I have not. I have a pretty good reason to believe that in Germany, that situation would have been a private confession.
I'm sure
I do not have a documentation on it.
Then the other question I have, and it has to do with documentation, because I'm a historian and I do teach in the area of Walther and so forth, besides Walter Forster, what really is your source of information, especially on this confessional stuff, that Louise Ginther was the first, for example? Is it something that I could check and look at?
This is the unpublished manuscript, the secondary source, and it is of the one William Kepchen.
Okay, so Kepchen. Kepchen is basically your source.
For that one, yes.
For that particular information.
Yes.
Okay, and I know that that's at CHI, so we can check that out.
Yes.
Good. Okay, thanks.
Good. Please? I can't see over there.
Brandon Froyland from Platte Woods, Missouri. I had a question for you too, Dr. Stefan. You had mentioned, I think, that the that Louise Ginther was either robbed of her of the absolution. Is it the word of the pastor, or is it the unbroken seal that gives it its power, absolution? I wondered.
I don't think I used the word robbed of her absolution.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Robbed of her rights as a U.S. citizen, okay. For certain, as an individual and a communicant, certainly. She did not, by going to him, if she wanted to, she could have got up in the middle of the church and said, I did it, you know. So the way we behave with one another certainly suggests that her pain was very evident in her reaction to the sermon. And I guess we have to say by logic, in our experience, that yes, that's the way she decided to handle it. The second part of your question has to do with, did that pastor break the office of the keys?
Well, I'm not questioning
that. Is that what you're
asking? I'm just wondering, is the power in that the seal is unbroken, or the word of forgiveness spoken through the pastor?
The seal was broken in that she was not offered the privacy that also carries with it. That's what I was saying. She certainly who knows what Loeber said to her? Well, we would think as a pastor that he would assure her of and talk more about the situation. Obviously, as a human being, he was pretty rattled. And some people have made the comment that, well, I mean, if you're going to have a confession, then sometimes, like right now, the state requires pastors as the counselor to, if there's somebody that's going to commit murder or there's an intention, that you have a duty to warn. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the office of the keys. And as far as I'm concerned, that part was probably not rendered less effective, but it was her right to have that not known by the whole congregation.
Okay.
Is that
Pastor addressing? Pastor Nuss?
Paul Nuss, Millersburg, Iowa. I'd like to address my question to Professor Pless and Dr. Culver in regards to what Dr. Mays suggested yesterday, that if a line were to be drawn on which Grabow and Leah and Walther were placed, that really Grabow should be recognized, although he didn't put it this way, the picture was that Grabow would be more deserving of being the golden mean, or certainly closer to Walther's position than Leah's position. I know that the two of you have studied Leah in comparison to Walther. I'd like your comment on that picture, please.
Just real briefly, my statement was only that on certain aspects of the doctrine of the ministry that Grabow would land in the middle between the two.
So well, he must work for CPH.
No. I wanted to hear from
Professor Pless. Let's hear you end your career. Go ahead.
No. Yeah. I'm always happy, Larry, to be a mediating theologian, and I have a ecclesial adaptability, as Dr. Scare has already pointed out, so no threat there. I think, again, we need to look at, in terms of Walther and Leah, we need to look at how close they were in that visit of 1851-1852, and you have documentation of that, again, in President Harrison's book. And I would encourage you to examine that. Both sides, they confess a closeness. I think one of the issues that needs further explanation is what actually happened in Saginaw with the three Leah men. And so I don't know enough about Grabow to really talk about how you would put him on a spectrum in regard to Leah and Walther, except to say I think, as Dr. Mays has already pointed out, it's not kind of a universal classification, but perhaps only in terms of certain aspects, perhaps especially with the question of emergency situation there, where Grabow clearly allows for an emergency celebration of the sacrament, and Leah would not.
Dr. Culver, anything to add?
No, I don't think I really have anything significant to add to that.
Okay. Pastor Nauman?
Thank you. A question for Pastor Stephan. What are we to make of the document that was translated a few years ago and is in the library here? It was translated with the title, The Destinies and Adventures of the Stephanists. And it's full of quotes from this... tabloid that was out there in the 1830s, the Anzeiger des Westens. The thing came out in 1839, and it's really full of deprecating descriptions of a cult that bears very little resemblance to the venerable theologians we've been talking about today. What are we to make of something from this vintage?
What do I make of it?
Because it describes Stephan as kind of a cult leader and Walther as a sort of crony who almost procured this 15-year-old girl for him.
Send it around via email.
Yeah.
Good one. Well, I haven't read that particular piece of paper. And what do I make of it? It was consistent with the accusations that came from the earlier comments of that editor. And when they finally, all the clergy decided before they went down to Perry County to completely distance themselves from Martin Stephan, as to shut him up, because he had been on their case ever since they landed.
Well, it's 125 pages, and it's mystifying to me. What I suppose I'm asking about is, in the early days, were the young Batchelor, Walther brothers less worthy theologians than they later became, or were they fully developed when they arrived?
Could I suggest you to describe the, or have that conversation one-on-one? But for the sake of time, we are nearing the hour for chapel, so I'm going to have ecclesiastical rank do its thing here. We obviously don't recognize the bishop, but President Harrison, would you ask your question, please?
The Anzeiger des Westens was a paper of the radical sort of 48er leftists, and they slammed any organized Christianity whatsoever with every opportunity they had. Just a slight comment. There is so much there that has not been translated. There's so much documentation that has not been investigated. It's unbelievable. The papers of O.H. Walther and C.H.I. are stacks, and hundreds of sermons and liturgies for every. Nobody's ever done a PhD on them. Nobody's ever looked at most of this stuff. It's all there. It's a fabulous institution, and even though and the boat that Marty got rowed across the river on is still there too. Anyway, and once in a while they bring it over to the International Center, and I'll sit in it someday too. But this is CHI needs your support, and there's so much there to be studied that it's unbelievable, and it's just waiting for you.
Thank you, President Harrison. Those are good words for us to conclude. Let's thank all of our speakers once more, please.